Faith Unscripted, a weekly program devoted to all things spiritual. Faith Unscripted, hosted by the Reverend Richard Hasselbeck, pastor of the historic Clarkstown Reformed Church, located at 107 Strawtown Road in West Nyack. You, your family, and friends are cordially invited to come worship every Sunday morning at 10:30. Pastor Rich loves to hear from our audience. Please give him a call. The number is 845-429-1700. That number again, 845-429-1700. And now we'd like to give a big hello to our friend, Pastor Rich. Good morning, Pastor.
Vince, good morning, and thank you for that great opening, and thank you, our beloved radio audience, for being with us once again this week. And today we have a special guest, Roxanne Watson.
Yes.
And Roxanne is not a stranger to the airwaves of WRCR because she hosts a show on Wednesdays.
Yes.
On organ transplants, and she herself is the recipient of an organ transplant. And she's made it her passion to find folks who are willing to give of themselves in death as well as in life,
mm-hmm.
by becoming organ donors. So, Roxanne, thank you for being with
You're
us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me. It's a great month for us. This is the beginning of National Minority Organ Donor Awareness Month, where we spend a month, educating.
Yeah.
Multicultural communities about the gift of life and organ donation.
Well, and it's important to remember, too, that St. Paul, in one of his letters, says that there are no Jews, no Greeks, no slaves, mm-hmm. nor free, no male, no female. All are one in Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And beneath the skin, I mean, we have superficial differences. Some of us are fat, some of us are skinny. Some of us have different pigments in our skin. We speak different languages. We have different accents. But when you get beneath the surface,
yep.
we all have the same stuff. We all have mm-hmm. We all have hearts. We all have livers.
Yep.
We all have kidneys, and we are all we all bleed. We all have blood.
Mm-hmm.
So being an organ donor is at least in some ways a way of acknowledging that no matter who we are, no matter what color, what race, what national origins, we can give to anyone in the world
mm-hmm.
who is in need of an organ donation.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think we have a caller.
Already.
Good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. This is known as Frank from Congress. But Roxanne, I had talked to you a week or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't forgot about you. It's funny. Yeah. And Pastor, thank you very much for all you do.
Thanks,
and
Frank.
Spirituality that lies in that. That also goes with stopping evil things. The Lord above definitely talks. I talk and pray every night. Open my books every night. But I was talking with Ms. Watson here. I'm going to talk. I'm going to get on the on Facebook.
Okay,
my wife
good.
Has Facebook, right?
Good.
And she goes, I know her. She's a nurse from Montefiore, Nyack. Her name's Patricia Pat. And she had visited you down in
mm-hmm.
your home.
Right.
Yeah. So just to let you know, we'll get on there. I'll update where you were. I just see my cardiologist yesterday.
All right.
Oh, Pastor, I need a kidney. That's what I'm looking for.
Yep.
If anybody's got a kidney out there, give us a shout.
You know what you got to do. Get on Facebook. Yep. Get in touch with me. I'll help you do everything you have to do to get
great,
that kidney.
Great. Well, just an update quick. I just talked on, I went to my cardiologist. He sent the last letter into Hackensack, and my social worker is bringing it up to the board on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see a problem getting on that list.
Good.
I was with Montefiore last week. And they're working on that. And I also called into Philadelphia.
Good
and
for
I got
you.
A visit with them. Yeah, so I'll get on Facebook. I
okay.
did not forget. Yeah,
all
my
right,
name is
good
Frank,
deal.
Frank Voce, V-O-C-E. If anybody's got one, let me know. All right?
Thanks, Frank.
I hate to do that on your
no,
line.
No, that's all right. But if you get on the Facebook, then we can do it the right way. Okay?
Yeah. All right, you got it. All right, have
all right.
a great day.
Congratulations.
And great show, Pastor.
Thanks, Frank.
Great.
And
woman.
And what we can do for you is we can pray. Right?
Yeah,
because because God provides. And so, Creator mm-hmm. God, we ask you to bless and provide for Frank.
Yeah, awesome.
We ask you to send him the right donor at the right time, in the right way, at the right place, and open all the doors so that he might live fully as you will him to live.
Mm-hmm.
And I ask you to send your healing love to fill him and surround him so that he might know that he never walks without you next to him. And we ask this in the name of the one God who creates, sustains, and saves us. He is Lord forever and ever.
Amen.
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 And
thank you.
And thank you all for praying with us.
Mm-hmm.
Roxanne, because this is a religious show, so I want to connect what you do
mm-hmm.
to what I do.
Okay.
So tell me something about your... What inspires you to do what you do? Years ago, and I was telling you this before the show, I watched a TV interview with the late Dr. Vartan Gregorian.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Gregorian at the time was the librarian of the New York City Library. And he kept an incredibly hectic pace. And at one point, his interviewer said, you know, Dr. Gregorian, how do you do it? How do you work from morning to night and go to all these events and give all these lectures? And his response was simply, the missionary is inspired by the mission.
Absolutely. There's no
question
about it.
Tell me about your inspiration.
Well, you know, I didn't get to tell you this when I met you, but I think the first time I was inspired is I was actually in the hospital waiting for the transplant. I had been through, you know, 4 years, 5 years of sickness and health. I mean, I was 95 pounds.
And you were a young woman.
Yep, laying in the hospital dying. And all the people around me were in their 80s and 90s, and people used to come in the room and go, what are you doing here? You know, like, you're just too young to be here. But probably around the 60th day, and I had been offered quite a like that time by Three Hearts, I had been offered and our team rejected them for different reasons. I had what Oprah would call an aha moment. It you know, wasn't like the lights opened up and, you know,
mm-hmm.
God came to me. Something happened to me at that 60th day. And I made a promise to God, to Lord, whoever it was, I made a promise that if I lived, if he would or she would let me live, that I would do the work that I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm.
It was a promise that I just said, you know what? I don't want anybody to go through this. I've had enough of this. I'm going to get well. And when I get well, I'm going to live to tell this story. And I'm going to inspire people to sign up to be organ donors. That was it. It was clear. It was one clear mission. It wasn't a whole bunch of fuzz. It was like, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to get up out of this bed. I'm going to take this new heart and get out there and save lives. And that was, I think, my first religious experience in terms of the transplant.
Right. Because it was an experience that gave you a mission.
Oh, yeah. It's clear, too.
So we see throughout the Hebrew scriptures, throughout the Christian scriptures, God blesses us mm-hmm. so that we might bless others.
Yes, and I was.
And at this point, you made a pivot in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And the pivot was, I'm no longer here just for me.
Right.
I'm not worrying about me only.
Mm-hmm.
If I get through this, Lord...
Mm-hmm.
I will spend the rest of my life helping other people to get through this.
Perfect. It was just that clear.
Yeah.
And you know, by it being that clear and not being fuzzy, there was no doubt.
Right. No doubt about two things. No doubt about your commitment,
mm-hmm.
but also no doubt about the outcome.
Oh, I'm just going to get up and I'm going to
do it. No doubt about the outcome.
Because you're going to give me the gift of life.
And that was coming.
And I'm going to take that and I'm going to go with it.
Yeah.
I always felt that it was. You know, people ask me a lot of times, was there ever a point where you thought you were going to die? Never.
Yeah.
Not once. I didn't feel like my time was done.
Yeah.
That I had something to do. I had to get up out of the bed and share the story.
But let's let this be a lesson
mm-hmm.
for everyone who gets what I would call a new lease on life.
It is.
Okay, and that is, when that turnaround comes,
mm-hmm.
it comes with a mission. You are given another chance so that you can do something of value with that other chance.
Absolutely.
And something of value isn't making, getting, spending, obtaining. It is blessing someone else.
Yeah.
Carl Menninger, one of the physicians who founded the Menninger Clinic, he was a psychiatrist. He was talking about how to help people with depression. Well, he says the best thing to do when you're depressed is you lock your door, go across the tracks, and find somebody to help and help them.
Absolutely.
And
that's true. You get up and you go, you know. And you know, when you said about it's not about this or that, quite often, and I get it a lot, people say, you know, well, you do all of this work. I think I'm over 1,000 venues and events by now in these 12 years. People say, you know, you don't even have money.
Yeah.
I don't need it.
Yeah.
All I need to do is eat, have a roof over my head, and a mission in my life. And that's the way I feel about it. No, I don't have money, but I don't care. It doesn't matter. People's like, oh, I'd write a book, I'd do this, I'd make a movie, you know. It's not about that. It's not about that.
It's funny because this Sunday in church we had the parable of the rich fool in the Gospel of Luke, where somebody comes to Jesus and says, you know, Lord, make my brother share his inheritance with me. And Jesus' response was, look, I'm, you know, what do I look like, a judge? he said, but be careful about greed. And then he tells this parable. And so short, I'm going to read it. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. Then he said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns, build bigger barns, and then I will store my surplus grain, and I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take it easy. Eat, drink, be merry. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded of you. Then who will get all that you have prepared for yourself? And he concludes with, this is how it is with those who store up things for themselves, but are not rich towards God. So what mistake did the guy make? Who, you know, basically, he's a good businessman, right?
Yeah.
He was a lucky guy.
I'm a hoarder.
But his land yielded an abundance. Whatever he's growing, it was a good year for it.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, holy crow, look at all I've got now.
Let me keep some more of it.
But he's not to blame. He didn't create the wealth. The land produced it. It was his good fortune to own the land.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, I'll build my barns, I'll take them down, I'll build bigger ones. All he's doing is thinking, he's talking to himself, he's thinking about himself, he's not sharing this with his neighbors, not with his friends, no wife.
Yeah.
He's a man who is isolated in his greed. And then the voice of God comes, you know, your life's going to be demanded of you this very day.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to get all your stuff? So where do we find our wealth? And the very next part of the gospel is where Jesus talks about the providence of God, that you know, don't worry about what you're going to eat or what you're going to wear, mm-hmm. because, you know, God's providence takes care of birds and flowers, and they're beautiful. Think first about the kingdom of God. And think first about doing the work of the kingdom of God. Everything else comes along with it.
Yeah, to me, it's totally about the work. My cardiologist, Dr. Shin, said to me, you know, this is before I got the transplant. It was a lot of, you know, psychological, and, you know, you had to go through a lot of testing, you know, because they want to make sure this is good for you, right? But she said to me, she said, organ donation is something you can't do by yourself. We will not help you, or we won't bother to get you an organ if you think you're going to do this by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I had my revelation, so to speak, and I said, it's not just about, you know, getting an organ. It's about doing the work so the next person can get the organ.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what she was telling me, is that, you know, you can't do this by yourself. Your family, your friends, everybody's going to have to help you. And
yeah.
That's the probably when people ask me the biggest lesson that I learned, the biggest lesson that I learned is that you can't do it by yourself.
Yeah.
It's not meant for you to do it by yourself. And it takes a village. It really does take a village to get a transplant.
Yeah.
You know, I had aunts who cleaned my house. I had my son who took care of my financials. I had, you know, people in the community coming by and doing my lawn and Gary's gutter service doing my, my gutters. I mean, it was literally almost all of Rockland County.
Mm-hmm.
That was helping me get this done. And there were people that helped me that I didn't even know about because I was so sick and in the hospital so long. You know, my house was still standing when I got back there.
Yeah.
You know, and I know after 104 days of being away, you know, it could have been, you know, could have been a disaster.
Well, and that's how the providence of God works. The right people come into your life at the right time. And look at what they were. These people weren't out there saying, what can I get from this?
Never even told me they did.
Right? I bet nobody sent you a bill.
No, and they never told me they did it. I found out years later, such and such did this while you were in the hospital, and they took care of your dog, and such went to took your dog to the vet. I mean, this is years after, not even right after.
Right.
Nobody said a word. They just did the work.
And see, this is religion in action, because religion is what connects us to each other and connects us to God, the source of life, the wisdom that lies at the heart of things. So when people rally around you in this case, when they're just being kind for the sake of being kind, nothing in it for them, when they enable you to have the gift of life, that is being rich in the kingdom of God. That's the mistake. The wise fool in that paragraph made the mistake of only being in it for himself. He was a selfish guy. But the people who look around their world and say, how can I help? How can I make somebody's life better? How can I give the gift of life? And what you do in your work is, having received the gift of life, I see two things. I don't know you that well, but I see gratitude. You are grateful. You're grateful to your donor. You're grateful to the people who helped you. And you're grateful to God.
You have to be.
Because he's the source of life. He gave you life in the first place, and he gave it to you twice.
Yep. And didn't have to.
That's right.
Second time he didn't have to.
Yeah, but he thought he should.
Yeah, he said, nah, I think you have some things to do. I felt like I still do. I always feel like I have things to do.
Yeah.
You know, I don't dwell on, oh, I was sick and I could just this and that.
Oh, you're the most lively person I've ever met. Well, one of them.
I get to meet some amazing people. I have met some amazing people.
Yeah.
In my second life.
Yeah.
People that I would never have met in my first life.
And I bet some of the amazing people aren't the stars. I mean, I mean, I know you've been on Oprah and Anderson Cooper and things like that, and I'm sure they're very nice people.
Yeah.
But the amazing people, like at Gary's Gutters.
Yes.
Right.
Amazing. I love that guy.
Yeah.
And George to the rescue. Yes.
Yeah.
I love these people.
Other
absolutely.
People who they're not celebrities. They're not stars. They're really not well known.
People in my community.
But they are people who are loving and kind.
And said, you need help, Roxanne, and we're going to help you.
Right,
and, you know, and at that point, I needed help.
Okay. And that's, to take a lesson out of that, that's what faith really is. I mean, religion is not a bunch of stuff we have to believe, and it's not wagging your finger at somebody and telling them how to act. Religion is active loving.
Mm-hmm.
It's not sitting around thinking about loving. It's not having wonderful thoughts. It is getting out there, rolling up our sleeves, and doing something.
Yep.
And that's what you do with the transplant passion that you have. Mm-hmm. You're out there looking for other people who are willing to give the gift of life.
Yes, because it's important.
Yeah.
You know, when people realize that there's 100,000 people right now, today, this morning, waiting for organs.
100,000
people. That's just America. Now, this is goes on all over the world. But there's 100,000 people waiting for organs right now. And of those 100,000, 80% of them are waiting for kidneys, something that we can give while we're alive to people.
Yeah.
You know, you just have to be able to help these people.
Yeah.
It's easy. It's really an easy thing to do.
I did it myself. I met you last, what was it, Thursday? When was it? When did Duop Bob
Thursday?
Have his lunch?
Yeah, it was Thursday.
Have his lunch. at Rick's. Let me give a nod to Rick.
Yes,
Rick's,
that was delicious.
Club American. Very good lunch there. Mm-hmm. And thanks to Bob for hosting it. But I sat across the table from you, and Larry and Jeff Cummings were there, and I lost my train of thought. No, you were telling me how easy it is,
yes,
to become an organ donor,
and you did.
So I went online that day, donated everything I have.
And how long did it take you?
Oh, it was fast.
Right,
it takes
less than 2 minutes to do it.
Yeah. It was no time at all.
Yeah.
And the nice thing is you don't have to worry about it until you're dead. And at that
then
point,
you don't
who
have
cares?
To worry about it. That's your
then,
family worry about it.
Then you're living and in fact, you know, when you give the gift of life, mm-hmm, you are storing up treasures for yourself in heaven.
Yeah. You're still here.
Once the gift has been given, that's the fulfillment of a promise.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that God smiles on.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
God wants everyone to have abundant life, and that means those 100,000 people waiting for whatever they're waiting for.
Yeah,
we are their hopes, and
yes.
You know, stay out of accidents and things like that. But be generous,
mm-hmm,
with everything we have to be generous with.
I think probably, I've received a lot of gifts, but one of the biggest gifts is being able to meet my donor family.
Yeah,
and knowing that, you know, they gave with love.
Yeah.
They gave with their religion. I mean, they were so proud to share the fact that they were Christian and that they felt the gifts that they gave were the gifts from God, that they gave their son. When they were asked if they wanted to donate in that horrible, horrible time, you know, of seeing your son after a motorcycle accident, you know, being brain stem damaged, everything, they said, you know, this is what he would have wanted.
Yeah.
And this is the work that he did while he was here, and this is the work of our family.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was one of the biggest gifts that I received, other than the heart.
Yeah.
The gift of love that those organs, where he saved five of us, they were given. It's just amazing. Every time I talk to them, it's just, It makes me, you know, like right now I have goosebumps when I talk to them and see that they gave with such love and they meant it.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, you know, we're just going to, no, they meant it, that he lived that life and they lived that life and they gave with that love. I know I'm a lucky girl.
You are a lucky girl. and they were blessed too, because they could bless you.
Yeah.
And
she said she lost one and she gained five.
Yeah.
That's what his mom said. And they mean,
wow.
Yes. She lost one son and gained five new family members.
That's what a wonderful perspective. Mm-hmm. God bless her.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of blessings, we are blessed with another caller.
Ah, okay.
Good morning, caller. You are on the air.
Good morning, Vince. Good morning, Pastor Rich and Roxanne.
That sounds like glory to me.
Two of my most favorite people in the world.
We
together
love you
on the radio.
We Thank love you too. Thanks for throwing us together.
Hey, it was my job.
Yes, it was. It's your calling.
you guys absolutely had to get together, and you had to get together on air.
Yeah.
And
everybody
because
kept saying that.
I know. Well, I took care of it.
And thank you.
You're very welcome.
This is an amazing woman.
Thank you.
Roxanne amazes me every day. When I grow up, I want to be like Roxanne.
Well, hurry up.
You guys are crazy. Thank you, Lori. Love you, too. Right back.
Oh, love you guys.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great show.
God bless. Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Calling.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah. Another person that I met that I would never have met.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Just amazing family. Just would never have met it.
How many donors have you brought into the donor pool?
We actually know of 12,560 that I have actually physically signed up.
Wow.
We know there's a lot more because people sent us messages from all over the world.
Yeah.
That, you know, they listen to the story. It's a story that you listen to and you do.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You listened. And you did.
Right.
And this is why we tell Michael's story, because
Michael's your donor.
Michael Beauville is my donor. He was a United States Coast Guard serviceman, 23 years old. fireman, E3 fireman in the Coast Guard who lost his life on the George Washington Bridge in a motorcycle accident. He had just left his family from dinner. He had had dinner with his whole family. His father said that after he passed away, they thought it was a gift that God gave them that he came home from the service that weekend and had dinner with his entire family. You know, these are gifts.
The memories,
that keep coming from Michael. But, yes, he saved five of us. He saved a little Hispanic girl in Staten Island, got one of his kidneys. African-American boy in the Bronx got his other kidney. 42-year-old Jewish man got double lungs.
Wow.
He had cystic fibrosis. And a 62-year-old Chinese man got his liver, and I got his heart. And it shows you, like you said before, the color of the skin has nothing to do with the gifts that are given. Michael saved all of us, you know, and everybody's still alive.
Well, and in a moment in our history and in time when when we are so divided by misunderstanding, hatred, and the like, I think it's important that there are ways to rise above that division. And one of the ways is to realize that we are all brothers and sisters.
Absolutely.
We are all one. And in that oneness, we can help each other. It doesn't matter if you're black, Chinese, Puerto Rican, white, anything. We can be a blessing to indiscriminately and should be a blessing indiscriminately to those who are most in need. And that is one way of living out our faith.
My surgeon had said that he was never in an operating room as a heart transplant surgeon where a family said they didn't want an organ because a person was a different color.
Yeah.
You know, and this is like it comes right down to what it is, you know. And it's the gift of life, and people just want it. You know, I didn't care where it came from.
Yeah,
And I'm just lucky that it came from a beautiful family that gave with love, but I could care less. They didn't have to tell me anything. All they had to do was tell me it's time to go to the operating room.
Yeah. And now you're a black woman with a white guy's heart.
There you go.
And it still works.
And I'm 23 years old again.
Well, I think you have to add together and divide
by
two.
Okay, so I'm 34.
Okay. That's all right. I'd rather be 34 than 23 anyway. So you had a very interesting experience as a child
which I forgot all about.
Connects to Michael and to your own transplant. Mm-hmm. Could you share that with us?
And as if you guys know anything about transplant, very often when you get a transplant, you have memory issues. I mean, you know, like you feel like you can't remember things. You might remember what happened 20 years ago, but not what happened last week and vice versa. But after about probably, I'd say about 2 years after sharing my story in all kinds of multimedia, somebody asked me a question that triggered a thought. And I remember it was Antoine Lewis from Channel 5 in New York, Fox New York. He asked me about if I remembered anything, you know, that would relate to my transplant. And I told him, I said, my mother was a nurse in the same hospital that I had the transplant, which was the weirdest thing. She was for 35 years, not at the time when I needed the transplant.
That's the Montefiore
Medical Center in the Bronx. She was a nurse in the neurological unit. And when they first devised, you know, take your children to work kind of day, I went with her one night on a night shift. And she was probably just trying to get rid of me because I was at the desk messing with all the telephones and stuff. And she's like, go down the hall, you know, and go see that young man that's in room 5, I think it was. And I said, okay, fine. I go down the hall, and I go in the room, and there's a young man there. And I remember he was a white male, 18 years old, blonde hair, blue eyes, the whole thing. And I went in there, and I stood for a few minutes, and then I said, you know, this is stupid. You know, he's in a coma. He doesn't know what's going on. I went back to the desk, and I said to her, I said, you know, why'd you send me down there? He's in a coma. He can't even talk to me or whatever like that. She says, no, go back and talk to him. because he can hear you. So I went back and I sat with him all night. And I don't remember what I was telling him. I know I was telling him about school and different things. And I remember speaking to him all night long. And then when I went home, she's like, you know, so how was the experience and everything? And I told her, I said, well, I don't know if he heard me, but I told him a lot. I had told him a lot of really personal things. And it wasn't until, probably, like I said, about two or so years after I had the transplant that that came back to me, that my donor had had a motorcycle accident and, you know, was somewhat in a coma too. And it just hit me in my new heart. It hit me that it was a lesson that came back to me from my mother, who had passed. My mother passed away a year after I had the transplant. So we don't even know. She had Alzheimer's, so we don't even know if she knew, because she was totally nonverbal. But my brother did go and tell her when I had the transplant.
Yeah.
But I didn't get to see her, you know, because I was in the hospital so long. But it was a very profound, you know, thing that I still remember now, but didn't remember at the beginning.
Well, there's a real connection between your early life and, you know, it's almost a prophetic moment.
Yes, that's a good way
when,
of putting
when you look back and see the hand of God in your life,
Michael,
and then this young man that you gave, I'm sure, some comfort and solace to.
Yeah, I still, you know.
You gave him a gift that day, the gift of your presence.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, as we talk about the gift of life and giving the gift of life, being a transplant, being an organ donor is one very important thing we can do. But we can give the gift of life in other ways, too.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways we give the gift of life is through our presence to people.
Mm-hmm.
As you were present to that young man in a coma years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Just being there, not turned in on ourselves, thinking about what we want, what we're doing, what we want to say next, but just being present to the other, to let them know that they matter, they value.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people suffer simply because they feel that no one values them and no one listens to them.
Mm-hmm.
We spend so much stinking time talking. How much time do we spend listening? You're just truly attending to the messages that people are sending. Because if you let somebody know that you're listening, they will want you to listen to them more.
Absolutely.
If they think you're not attending to them, they'll talk about the weather and the ball scores and all
that
stuff.
Or they won't be bothered with you at all.
Or they won't matter. Yes.
After that encounter.
But when you start signaling, yes, I'm listening, yes, I'm interested, yes, your story matters to me, then that story will begin to unfold in more detail as they begin to trust us. And that's a gift of life.
Yeah.
You know, every one of us may have people in our lives who need our attention.
Absolutely.
You know, the old people who are in nursing homes or homebound need a visit. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And not just a in and out type of visit, but a visit that, you know, sits down and brings cookies.
Mm-hmm. I do a lot of venues, honestly. Probably the most exciting thing that I do is, you know, speak to the people at the naturalization. But one of the first venues that I went to was a nursing home.
Yeah.
Which they invited me to come and speak to them. And I sat and I spoke to them. I told them the story. I showed them the videos. And then I sat there all day.
Yeah.
And something just told me, just, you know, be
just
here.
Just stay there.
Just be here. And spoke to different people about different things. But I felt that I had a beautiful gift that day, that they gave me another gift, you know, the gift of attention.
Yeah. And when you give a gift like that, you do receive more than you expect. You know,
absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's important not to do things expecting a benefit, but I also think it's amazing that our acts of kindness, no matter how small they are, always bounce back and bless us as well.
Mm-hmm. When I came home from the hospital, probably when I was able to have visitors, it wasn't the 90 days, nobody could come around me, I had to stay in the house. I had time to go through a lot of the things that I had, material-wise, and I literally start just giving stuff away.
Yeah.
just gave my jewelry to my nieces. So I was like, why do I have to sit around and wait for people to die to give?
Yeah.
Right? I started giving things away. And my cousin came to me and she said, do you think you're going to die? And I'm like, what do you mean? She says, well, you're giving everything away.
Yeah.
You must think, people that are going to die usually do stuff like that,
yeah.
But it didn't. That didn't matter to me, that part of it. I didn't even think about that part
yeah,
of it.
Yeah.
The part of me was I wanted somebody to have just a little piece of me. Just yeah. a little piece, whatever it was, whether they wanted it or not.
Yeah, yeah.
And my niece always would come to me and say, you know what? Of all the things, all the jewelry pieces and things that I have, I cherish that ruby ring.
Yeah.
Because I know you gave it to me.
Yeah.
And you gave it to me because you wanted me to have it.
Yeah, what a great thing to learn. The ruby ring in your hands was just a ruby ring,
just another bunch of
but
more
as a
jewelry.
As a gift to your niece, it becomes a beautiful reminder
yes.
of your love mm-hmm. and your care for her
yep.
and your family.
She still tells me about it, and I gave it to her 10 years ago almost.
Yeah, yeah.
And she still talks about it, and I never thought about that. I just said I'm gonna.
So there's a little lesson about stuff for us all.
Yes.
In the same 12th chapter of the Gospel of Luke, where we heard the parable of the rich poor or the rich fool. Pardon me. Jesus says, "Give all you have, and sell all you have, and give to the poor, and have treasures in heaven." And I think he means just that. Don't grasp stuff. When we cling to stuff,
garbage.
It just becomes dust in our hands.
Yep.
But when we open our hands and bless with what we have, when we bless with our stuff, when we bless with our wealth, when we bless with our time and attention, when we bless with everything that we have, then we make a difference. And that's giving to the poor. The poor aren't just the financially poor.
Mm-hmm.
The poor are the intellectually poor. The poor are the spiritually poor.
Spiritually, for
the,
sure.
The poor are the folks who are living empty lives because they don't know where to find happiness, and they're looking for it in all the wrong places. So when we let go of our stuff
mm-hmm.
and give to them, hoping to lift them up, maybe they'll be able to find that nobody ever finds happiness in a car, in a big house, in a boat, or in anything, in a big bank account, a huge 401k. Augustine says in his Confessions, "Our hearts are restless, Lord, until they rest in you."
Mm-hmm.
We are, as human beings, infinite longing. We are infinitely wanting. And when you want with an infinite longing, only the infinite can fill us.
Mm-hmm.
And so our hearts, Augustine is right, our hearts are restless and empty until they find God.
When I laid in the hospital and I thought, I didn't think I was going to die, but I always thought maybe I will never go home again. Let's
yeah.
put it that. Maybe I'll be in a nursing home the rest of my life, whatever like that. The last thing I worried about, they called me and said, "Your last payment is due." Called me, my social worker, she used to stop everything, "Your last payment on your truck is, you just paid it."
Yeah.
"What do you want? Do you want to renew it?" I had bought this big yellow Hummer. I had a yellow H3 Hummer that I wanted this truck,
Yeah.
I had to
yeah.
have this truck. And when I laid there and they told me, "Your last payment is due, what do you want to do with it?" I said, "Tell them to come with the tow truck and take it the hell away from me."
Yeah.
Because it didn't mean anything.
It didn't make you happy.
It was stupid. It was useless. I couldn't drive. I didn't know if I'd ever be able to drive. And it didn't mean anything to me. Like when I bought it, I wanted it. I needed to have it because that's what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it, and it was, what did it mean?
Yeah.
It didn't mean anything to me if I didn't have a life and I didn't have the people around me. It didn't mean a thing. I said, you could just come and pick it up.
So is it fair to say that one of the most important things you learned from your experience is what to value what really is valuable in
oh,
your
yeah.
life?
There's no question about it. If you don't learn that as a transplant recipient, you have learned nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing at all. And so, as a donor, even as a donor, that's the biggest lesson.
Yeah.
And that you can't, and the other one was that you cannot do things by yourself.
Yeah.
You can't do them. You can't get, there's no success without the people around you.
Yeah, yeah.
you know.
And I think you see that in the parable of the rich fool. He's isolated in his greed.
Right.
And in both the Judeo-Christian tradition, at least, we find the importance of community.
Mm.
That we're in this together.
Yep, it's the village.
And the community is not a segregated community. The community is a place where everybody is welcome. All children of the Creator and Father and Savior and Redeemer. All of us are welcome, regardless of whether we didn't finish grade school or have two PhDs,
mm-hmm.
regardless of our socioeconomic status, regardless of anything that might divide us, regardless of our vaccination status.
Mm-hmm.
We were mentioning this before the show, too, that there was a horrible case I heard of from the University of Michigan Medical Center where a 35-year-old mother of five was denied a transplant simply because she was not vaccinated, and they refused her
to be listed.
They wouldn't let her. They had already been treating her, but they mm-hmm. they wouldn't let her get a transplant, and they didn't accept her religious exemption. So it's really horrible because it would be a life saving treatment.
Poor kids, if nothing else.
And it's to see a. The University of Michigan Medical Center has deep financial connections to Pfizer, so I see this as medical corruption, and I would just encourage everyone to stop building walls between people around our differences. Let people be themselves, Let's stop discriminating.
Yeah.
About things that don't matter, and vaccination status
totally
doesn't
stupid.
Matter as well.
You know, one thing that I have to say about other than stories like that, but one thing I have to say generally about organ donation is it's something that people don't politicize.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
When I go in, and this is a perfect example of what goes on in terms of what I do. When I go to the Senate, I'm welcomed by everybody. When I go to Assembly, I'm welcomed by anybody. You know, and every single politician here in Rockland County supports organ donation.
Yeah.
And they support it with action.
Yeah.
You know, I go to different places. I'm invited everywhere. It doesn't matter if they're Republicans or whatever, Democrats. This is something that everybody puts their hand around.
Yeah.
You know, when we've passed six pieces of legislation since the days of David Carlucci, who was the biggest, advocate.
And a wonderful man.
Yes.
A wonderful man.
Absolutely worked with him for 10 years. I worked with him on organ donation. We've passed six pieces of legislation. Every single one of them, a safer one,
mm-hmm.
was passed unanimously. And that's something that, like, they used to tell me all the time, Roxanne, when you come up here, we know what we're going to do, And that is definitely something that I have to say that is a good thing that comes out of it. It's not politicized. Everybody wants to live.
And I think we should keep it that way.
Yes.
And refuse to allow the politics of
to leak into that.
Of the nation
and
to,
the money.
To leach into medicine and allow medicine to become yet another barrier
mm-hmm.
to access for people who choose to exercise their human rights in ways
when
that
people
aren't popular.
We're talking about the pharmaceutical companies like that. When I found out about different things in terms of the pharmacy, I just went and started working with them.
Yeah,
I just went and challenged them, and I said, and we've had some of them on our show and everything to say, you can't tell me that you make a drug that people will live because of that drug, and you're not going to give it to them.
Right.
Period.
Right.
I don't want to know about the money. I mean, some people can afford it, some people can't. I mean, for the first 2 years of my transplant, I didn't pay for anything.
Yeah.
And my medications cost at least $12,000 to $14,000 a month.
Wow.
Right, a month. There's no reason why there's something that you make to save lives is not available
to save
lives.
That's right.
Right? And talk about the politics of it. But you have to open your mouth.
Yeah.
I don't have any problem doing that. But I, biopharma, I work with them. I work with pharma, whoever I can work with
yeah.
to make sure that as we are transplant patients, we get life-saving drugs.
Right.
You know.
Well, and that touches not only in the politics, but also the economics of medicine and life-saving drugs.
Yeah, I understand that they need the money to do R&D, but, you know, after you do the R&D and it's proven, let's have the drugs.
Well, I mean, we don't know how much money they need, but in fact, I think there's a matter of priorities. And the priority is life over
absolutely.
Profit.
All the time.
So
it has to be.
I don't see any pharmaceutical companies going broke. quite the opposite. So their responsibility is not to be wise fools, not to be so focused on the bottom line and profit and making money.
Because there's plenty of that anyway.
That they forget the human cost of their greed.
Yeah.
And you know, as Jesus says to the young man who comes up to him to ask about a will contest or an estate contest, he says, beware of greed. Greed kills. It kills families, it kills relationships, and it kills people.
Mm-hmm.
When corporate greed places the bottom line above providing people with the life-saving treatments and drugs that they need. And that's the challenge of the medical profession, but they need to realize that they have been blessed with great abundance and knowledge.
Yeah, it's the knowledge. It's amazing.
But no gift is given simply to bless the giver, to bless the donee.
Mm-hmm.
It is given so that we might in turn bless others. And that's what you do every day by going out and looking for more donors.
Yes, everywhere we go.
Everywhere you go.
They know when they see us coming.
What's your biggest challenge been in your work?
I would say, honestly, at the beginning, it was people with religious beliefs, you know, different religious beliefs. But now it's just, to me, it's just getting, I'm out there, just getting more places, you know.
How did religious people, that's an interesting thing, how did they challenge you?
Because it was a lot of misconceptions about what the religious element in organ donation, you know, what was the connection between those two things. A lot of people, and especially when I first started, especially people in this community were saying, well, we're Jewish, we don't do it.
Huh.
You know?
That's not true, I don't think.
Oh, it's absolutely not true.
Yeah.
It's absolutely not true. But it was a thing, you know, is again, talking about that religious thing, you know, it was the thing that I would hear every place I went. Oh, we don't do it, we don't do it. Everybody, a rabbi in Muncie told me, everybody wants to live.
Yeah.
I've never met anybody in my synagogue that didn't want to live. And that was probably my biggest lesson that come, you know, from the community that, you know, everybody wants to live. And I would have people call me, you know, and say, you know, I want you to talk to Rabbi such and such, and because there's somebody in the synagogue that needs a kidney and we can't convince them that it's, you know, it's not against the religion to do it, you know. It's not against the religion. The religion, all religions say, you know, the sanctity of life.
Life is a gift, and we should do everything we can to bless
and
people.
Give it after we're finished with ours. Just give it, you
Amen.
Know. That's all it is to it. We're not asking you to do anything more than that. If you decide to donate while you're alive, beautiful. But if you don't, we just ask you to do it when you're done.
Could you explain to listeners how they could donate easily? What site they can go
well,
to?
Well, if they're here in New York, you just go, if you're in lower New York and the five counties that are in the lower New York and all of New York City, you just go to Live On New York.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do it right online. If
that's what I did. It's
right.
Very easy.
It's super easy. You can do it in 2 or 3 minutes.
So that's liveonnewyork.com?
liveonnewyork.org.
.org,
actually.
Okay.
And if you're in upper New York, you just go to Donate Life New York State. And you just, the same thing. You can do it in the same amount.
DonateLifeNewYorkState.org?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, the same way. If you're in the country, you can go to RegisterMe.org. It doesn't matter what state you're in. And it'll just come up, and then you click on your state, and you do it in your state.
And for the purposes of my podcast, where we have listeners in Portugal, Greece, mm-hmm. Australia, Canada,
every
United Kingdom,
different.
Ireland, how can they...
They have to go on to their country thing and just... Well, you know what? Most of those countries, I have to say, they have 100% organ donation. It's the opposite of us.
Really?
Everybody, Spain, United Kingdom,
yeah.
Scotland, all of that is... Everybody's a donor until they take themselves off of the registry.
Yeah.
We're the only country that we're fighting people to join. You know, and Sweden, Switzerland, all of those. Everybody's a donor until you undonate. You
yeah.
know? So it's just the opposite. We are so far away from that, and I hope one day we get there so we don't have to do this wrangling, you know?
Yeah. I had a professor. I took a course when I was in law school in law and medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And my professor, Buzzy Barron, his name was Charles Barron, we mm-hmm. call him Buzzy. Lovely man, kind guy, wonderful, great heart. He was an organ donor. He was encouraging us even then to be organ donors.
Yeah.
And he said, there's only one thing I wrote on my organ donor card.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure I'm dead.
That's up to your family. You will not make that decision. Your family will make that decision for you. A lot of people ask that question, you know, well, how do they know really when I'm dead?
Well, I think he was afraid that an overzealous heart surgeon would say, he's lived a good long life.
Let him go.
Yeah.
No. No, that's totally up to your family. Your family has to make the final decision in that. That's why you have to have that conversation.
And that's why you have to be nice to your family.
Yes, because they will donate you.
Yes. Maybe they won't make sure you're dead. No, I'm just kidding.
No, a lot of people ask that question.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's important to know that there are fail-safes in the system.
Oh,
so
there's a lot of them, believe me.
Folks don't go to old age homes and say, these old geezers, they can, they've lived a good long life. Let's get these. Let's harvest some of these organs.
Yes.
What do you have coming up on your show tomorrow?
Tomorrow I'm going to have Steve Weed, is his name. And Steve is a kidney advocate, someone who waited for a kidney and would need multiple organ donation. But luckily, when he received the kidney, it solved the other organ problems. So he's going to be on tomorrow, and he's going to share his story, because mm-hmm. that's what we do, share his story. And we're going to talk also a little bit about this month being National Organ Donor Minority Month. We're going to talk a little bit about that. And in the coming weeks, we're going to have New Jersey Sharing, which is the same organization as New York, Live on New York, but New Jersey. And Live on New York's going to have a show. And then, you know, we're going to be, what do we got coming up that's in Rockland County? We'll be back in the mall soon.
Oh,
we
good.
Do the mall weekends. And on the 24th, I'll be at Walgreens in New City. We're going to be, it'll be Walgreens National Donor Month. So that's a national program. I'll be there answering questions, signing people up.
Excellent.
Busy.
And your show tomorrow is what time?
Oh, tomorrow, 9:15. It starts at 9:15 to 10. Tomorrow.
Okay, mm-hmm. So don't miss it. That's
Michael's gifts.
That's appointment radio. Michael's
yes.
gifts on WRCR.
Yes, and so call in. And don't leave me messages after the show's over.
Yes,
just call in and ask them.
We are down to our last minute, so I'd just like to thank everyone for being with us.
Mm-hmm.
Roxanne, thank you for being such a wonderful guest, and Vince, thanks for being such a wonderful announcer, and thank you, audience, for just being there.
Yep.
I pray that you will all be blessed and kept safe. We do at the Clarkston Reformed Church have a service at 10:30 on Sundays. If you have no faith home, you're always welcome to visit us, 10:30 Sunday mornings. And on the last Saturday of every month, we have a healing service at 11:30 in the morning. So healing service, last Saturday of the month, Sunday services every Sunday at 10:30. And we have a Bible study on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock, well, 6:45.
In the morning?
No. That would even I wouldn't come to that. That's in the evening, and we're studying the Paul's letter to the Romans. We are going through it at my usual glacial pace.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks again for being with us. God bless you, and I look forward to being with you next week.
Take care, everyone.
AM 1700 WRCR, Haverstraw.